Joseph Becomes a Ruler. Joseph was sold by his brothers to Midianites who were traveling to Egypt. The Midianites sold Joseph as a slave to a rich man named Potiphar, who was a captain of the guard. Joseph decided he might as well make the best of it by being a good slave. So he tried to be cheerful. He learned the Egyptian language so he would understand Potiphar's commands and be able to answer. And he obeyed quickly and well. As a result, Potiphar was well pleased with Joseph. He put him in charge of several other slaves. Again, Joseph decided to do his best. And Potiphar was so well pleased with the way he handled a few slaves, he put Joseph in charge of a larger number. Again, Joseph decided to do his best. And this time, Potiphar was so well pleased, he put Joseph in charge of all the slaves of his big estate. Joseph still believed that someday, somehow, he would be a ruler. But first, he would surely have to become a free man. So he worked toward his freedom, believing that this was the first step. However, Potiphar's wife became angry with Joseph, told some nasty lies about him, and had her husband throw him in jail. Poor Joseph, just when he believed he could someday earn his freedom, he was held a prisoner in jail. Well, said Joseph, it's no use fighting. I might as well make the best of things. So he tried to be the best prisoner in the jail. When Joseph offered to help the keeper of the jail, his offer was accepted. Soon the keeper found Joseph such a help, he put him in charge of all the other prisoners. Trying as usual to do his very best, Joseph was kind to the other prisoners, listened to their complaints and troubles, and tried to help and comfort them. One morning, Joseph found that two of the prisoners were unhappy. Both of them were troubled by strange dreams they had had the night before. "Tell me your dreams," said Joseph. "Perhaps God will show me their meaning." Now one of these men was chief butler to the king, or Pharaoh as he was called. He had dreamed that he saw a vine with three branches. Right before his eyes, the vine sprang into bud, the buds opened into blossoms, and the blossoms turned into ripe grapes. The grapes were so ripe and juicy, the butler picked them and squeezed their juice into Pharaoh's cup. Then he handed the cup to Pharaoh. This was the butler's dream. After hearing it, Joseph was silent for a few minutes. Then he said, "The three branches are 3 days. In 3 days, Pharaoh will set you free, and you will again become his butler. Now I have told you the meaning of your dream, and I'm going to ask a favor of you. When you are free, remember me, and do what you can to get me out of this prison." The butler promised Joseph he would. Then Joseph turned to the other man whose dream was troubling him. This man had been chief baker to Pharaoh. He had dreamed that he had 3 white baskets on his head. The basket, which was on top, contained cakes for Pharaoh, and some birds flew down and ate it all up. Again Joseph was silent for a few minutes. Then he said, "The 3 baskets are 3 days, and I am sorry to tell you that according to your dream, in 3 days, Pharaoh will have you hanged." Now it happened that 3 days later, Pharaoh was celebrating his own birthday, and he had the chief butler taken from jail and given back his job. But he commanded that the chief baker be hanged. The chief butler had promised to help Joseph when he had again become butler to Pharaoh. But he forgot all about him. 2 years passed, and Joseph was still in prison. Then one night, Pharaoh himself had 2 dreams which bothered him. The next morning, he sent for all the wise men of his court to interpret his dreams, but none of them could give the meaning.
"Is there no one in all the world who can interpret my dreams?" cried Pharaoh.
Then at last the chief butler remembered Joseph. He told Pharaoh how Joseph had correctly told his dream and that of the chief baker.
"Send for him," cried Pharaoh. "Send for him at once."
When Joseph was told that the Pharaoh wanted to talk to him, he bathed, put on fresh clothes, and hurried along to the Pharaoh's court. The Pharaoh's dreams were quite strange. He had dreamed that he was standing by the river Nile, and saw, standing in the river, 7 fat, healthy cows. As he watched, the 7 fat, healthy cows came out of the water and began to eat grass along the river's bank. Then Pharaoh saw that there were 7 other cows in the river Nile, 7 thin, starved cows. The 7 thin, starved cows also came out of the river. But they didn't eat grass along the river's bank. The 7 thin, starved cows ate up the 7 fat, healthy cows. Yet even after eating the fat, healthy cows, the thin, starved cows were still thin and starved. That was Pharaoh's first dream. His second dream was about corn. He dreamed that he saw a stalk with 7 fat, ripe ears of corn on it. And there, right beside it, was another stalk with 7 thin ears of corn on it. There was almost no corn on the 7 thin ears. As Pharaoh looked at these 2 stalks, each with 7 ears on it, the thin ears of corn ate up the fat, ripe ears. Yet, though they had eaten up the fat ears of corn, the thin ears were still thin. That was Pharaoh's second dream. After hearing the dreams, Joseph was silent. Then he told Pharaoh that both dreams meant the same thing. The 7 fat, healthy cows and the 7 fat, ripe ears of corn stand for 7 years of plenty, Joseph said. For 7 years, Egypt will have fine crops and people will have more food than they can eat. But this plenty will last only 7 years. After that, there will be 7 thin years, years in which crops will fail and people will have almost no food at all. The 7 thin cows and the 7 thin ears of corn stand for 7 thin starvation years.
Oh, dreadful, cried Pharaoh. We will starve to death.
No one needs to starve, said Joseph quietly. Put a wise man in charge of all the land. Give him plenty of helpers. Then, during the years of plenty, when there is lots of food, this man and his helpers can collect all that the people don't need and store it. They can put it away and save it for the years when there is almost no food. So when the thin years come, the food can be taken from the storage places and divided among the people. In that way, no one will starve. Pharaoh turned to those around him and said,
How wise this man is! He has not only told me my dreams, telling me of the famine which is to come upon the land, but has told me what to do about it. Surely there is no one in all of Egypt who is better able to take charge and save us from famine than he.
And saying this, Pharaoh put his own ring on Joseph's hand and hung a gold chain around his neck. He gave him fine clothes and let him ride in the 2nd finest chariot in all the land. That day, Pharaoh made Joseph ruler of all Egypt. Pharaoh himself was the only man in all the land greater than Joseph. The baby Moses and the Egyptian princess. After Joseph and his brothers had died, their children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren continued to live in Egypt. And a new pharaoh came to rule over the land. This new pharaoh had not known Joseph and cared nothing for his family. As a matter of fact, the new pharaoh was jealous of all of the Israelites. The pharaoh decided it would be a good idea to put the Israelites in bondage, make slaves of them, work them hard and feed them sparingly. He felt this would weaken them and kill them off. But his plan didn't work. When Pharaoh saw this, he said, We will have to do something drastic to stop the Israelites from increasing so rapidly among us. Let it be known throughout the land that any boy baby born to Israelite parents is to be killed. Now, after this order went out from Pharaoh, a boy baby was born to 2 Israelites who were members of the tribe of Levi. These parents already had a little girl named Miriam and a little boy named Aaron. Aaron was just 3 years old at the time. Miriam was older. The family had heard of Pharaoh's order that newborn Israelite boys were to be killed, and they decided that this should not happen to the little baby who had come to them. For 3 months, they hid their baby. But they knew that sooner or later someone would see him or hear him cry, and the baby's mother prayed constantly to be shown what she could do to save her little son. Finally, the mother seemed to receive an answer to her prayer. She thought of a plan which might save her baby. She had learned that the Pharaoh's daughter bathed each day in the Nile River. She knew that the Pharaoh's daughter was the one person in all the land who could save the little fellow. So she planned to arrange it so that the princess would find the baby. The princess would be sure to love him, his mother thought. And loving him, she would surely ask Pharaoh to spare his life. It was a daring plan, but there seemed to be no other way. So she made a basket or ark of bulrushes and lined it with pitch. The pitch made it waterproof. This was because the basket would have to rest on water near the spot where the princess bathed each day. When the basket was ready, the mother told Miriam what she was going to do, and asked her to wait nearby and watch and see what happened. Miriam had not long to wait. Soon the princess and her attendants came to bathe in the river. By this time, the baby had begun to cry, and the princess heard him. When she discovered him lying in the ark of bulrushes, she picked him up in her arms. Right away, he stopped crying and began to coo. "What a darling baby," cried the princess. "I think I'll keep him." "But he's an Israelite," said one of her attendants. "All the more reason I should keep him," said the princess. "I wouldn't want any harm to come to such a sweet baby. I'll adopt him as my own son. I'll give him my protection." When Miriam, who was hiding nearby, heard the princess say this, she ran to her and said, "Oh, lovely princess, would you like me to get an Israelite to nurse the baby for you?" "Yes, child, that's an excellent idea," said the princess. "If you know an Israelite who would make a good nurse, bring her to me, and I will pay her well." So Miriam ran off and returned with the baby's own mother. As the princess handed the baby to his mother, she said, "Take him to your own home and keep him until he is older. Then bring him to me at the palace, that he may grow up as my own son." "Yes, Your Highness," said the baby's mother. "But what does Your Highness wish to call the baby?"
"He shall be called Moses," said the princess. "Moses means drawn out, and I have this day drawn him out of the water."
So the baby, who was to be called Moses, was taken home by his mother and raised by her until he was old enough to live in the palace. His mother thanked God for allowing her to be with her son during the early years of his life. She taught Moses about God and told him that she believed God had helped her save him so that he might grow up to be a leader of the Israelites. Moses' mother believed that someday he would lead the Israelites to freedom. After Moses went to live at the Pharaoh's palace with the princess, he thought of what his mother had said to him. There in the palace, he was given the education of a prince. This was perfect training for leadership. Perhaps his mother had been right. Perhaps someday he would become the leader of his people. Moses and the Burning Bush. One day, after Moses had become a man, he saw an Egyptian brutally mistreating an Israelite who dared not defend himself. Seeing how unfair the Egyptian was, and feeling that it was his duty to help the Israelite, Moses fought with the Egyptian, and in the fight, the Egyptian was killed. Now Moses had to leave Egypt because he knew that the Pharaoh would surely have him put to death. He made his way to the land of Midian, and was helped by a priest named Jethro, who gave him a job caring for sheep. The work was hard for him at first. His life in the palace had been sheltered and easy. Now, as a shepherd, he had to meet all the dangers which threatened his sheep, had to search for those who became lost, bathe and bind up the wounds of those who were hurt, and guard his flock from wild animals night and day. But Moses was grateful for a chance to start over again, and many times a day he thanked God for being so good to him. As days, weeks, months, and years passed, Moses grew to love the sheep he cared for. He loved the stillness of the wilderness, the cool of the shade near the water's edge, and the brightness of the stars at night. Moses grew in admiration for God, who had created all this. But he thought of God as being up in the heavens, completely separate and apart from him. Then one day, Moses came to a bush, which was so beautiful he stopped to stare at it. He had become interested in flowers, trees, and plants. He had grown to enjoy the little animals of the wilderness. He had come to know the call of certain birds. But this bush was different from anything else. "It seems to be aflame with life," cried Moses. "It has so much life it's on fire, yet it is not burned up. The more life and beauty it gives out, the more it seems to get. The life in it is always there." Suddenly, as Moses stood there looking at the bush, he realized that God was in the beauty he saw there. Then God spoke to him. "Moses," said God, "you are standing on sacred ground. Come no nearer. Take off your sandals and stand where you are. For I am the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob." Moses removed his sandals and covered his face. He was frightened by the thought that God was right there with him. Then God spoke again. "Moses, the Pharaoh who sought to kill you is now dead, and another rules in his place. This new Pharaoh is even more cruel than the first. Go to Egypt and free the Israelites from their slavery." When he was a young man living in the palace, Moses had believed he would do this very thing. But now he was not so sure of himself.
"Who am I," he cried, "that I should lead the children of Israel out of Egypt?"
"You will not do it alone," said God. "I will go with you."
"But," Moses said, "if I were to go to the Israelites and tell them that I was to lead them out of Egypt, they wouldn't believe me. And if I said God sent me, they'd say, 'What's his name?' And I wouldn't know how to answer them."
"I am who I am," said God. "Tell them I am sent you. Tell them it is the God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, who sent you to lead them out of their troubles."
But Moses continued to worry for fear the Israelites would not be willing to follow him. So God said,
"What is that in your hand, Moses?"
"A rod."
"Throw it on the ground."
Moses threw the rod on the ground, and right before his eyes it turned into a snake. Moses ran from it in fear.
"Don't be afraid," said God. "Take the snake by the tail."
Moses did this, and the snake turned into a rod again.
"Now," said God, "if the Israelites refuse to believe that you have come from me, show them what you can do with your rod. Then they will believe."
But still Moses made excuses. "I'm not a good speaker," he said. "I'm slow to speech. I can't talk to the Israelites."
"Who made man's mouth?" asked God. "Have not I? And if I made man's mouth, can I not make that mouth to speak? I will be your mouth. Know what you are to say, and it will be said through you. Go now to Egypt, for I will be with you."
But still Moses was unsure. He felt he couldn't do the speaking he would need to do, argued against trying.
"Very well, then," said God. "Your brother Aaron shall go with you and do the speaking for you." This idea satisfied Moses, and he agreed to return to Egypt and do all he could to free his people, the Israelites. The First Passover. Moses and his brother Aaron returned to Egypt and told the Israelites God had sent them to help in being freed from their slavery. Moses and Aaron next went to see the Pharaoh. They asked the Egyptian ruler if they could take their people on a 3-day journey into the desert to worship their God.
But Pharaoh did not like the idea. "Who is the Lord?" he asked. "Why should I let you go into the desert to worship him?"
Pharaoh suspected that the Israelites were trying to free themselves, and he wanted to discourage any such ideas. So he called his taskmasters to him and told them to work the Israelites harder.
"We're working them as hard as we can right now." "Then make them build bricks without straw," said the Pharaoh.
"Well, that's impossible. Bricks cannot be made without straw."
"They must do the impossible," said Pharaoh.
The poor Israelites. They went out into the fields and dug up the stubble which was left after the straw had been cut. They had to work half the night as well as all day. Never had their work been so hard.
Then they learned that Pharaoh himself had ordered this because they had dared send Moses and Aaron to ask for their freedom. This caused the people to turn against Moses and Aaron, who were puzzled at the way things had turned out. They asked God why he had sent them to help the Israelites, and then had made things worse for the Israelites as soon as they tried.
God replied that they should be patient. He told them again that the people of Israel would be set free. He told them to go again to Pharaoh. So they went again. This time, Pharaoh asked them to show some sign that their God had power. So Aaron threw down the rod and turned it into a snake.
"That's good," said Pharaoh. "But I think my magicians can do as well."
He sent for his magicians and commanded them to do what Aaron had done. They threw down their rods and made them turn into snakes, just as Aaron had been able to do. But they couldn't make the snakes turn back into rods. When Aaron saw this, he commanded his snake to eat up all the magician snakes. Then he turned his snake, with all the other snakes inside it, back into a rod.
Pharaoh thought that this was one of the best tricks he'd ever seen.
But he would not let the Israelites go. Soon after this, a lot of unhappy things began to happen to Pharaoh and the Egyptians. All kinds of plagues came upon them. First, the waters of Egypt were turned red, and no one could drink it. Then frogs came out of the rivers and spread all over the land. They even got into Pharaoh's palace and into his bed and his kitchen ovens. Following this, Pharaoh and the Egyptians were bothered by lice and then by flies. Then much of their cattle died.
Then came a terrible hailstorm which destroyed the crops of the land. Then locusts swarmed over the land, destroying what was left of the crops. Even the sun, which Pharaoh had worshipped, failed to show itself for 3 days, and a dreadful thick darkness hung over Egypt. Each time one of these plagues came upon the land, Pharaoh believed that the God of the Israelites had caused it to punish him for not freeing the Israelites. So each time, he called Moses and Aaron and begged them to pray to their God to take the plague away. Each time he promised that if God would set them free from their trouble, he would let the Israelites go. But each time, after Moses and Aaron had prayed and relief had been given, Pharaoh changed his mind and said the Israelites couldn't go. Then Moses was warned by God that the worst plague of all was coming upon the land of Egypt, and he was told exactly what the Israelites should do so that the plague would not touch them. Each family was to get a lamb for roasting and put some of the lamb's blood on the front door, all along the top and down the sides. This would serve as a sign that in that house, the people counted on God to keep them safe. All the Israelites did what Moses told them to do, and all of them were saved from the plague. It passed over them. So they called that day the Day of the Passover, and have celebrated it ever since. This last plague was a terrible illness which killed Pharaoh's oldest son and the firstborn son in other Egyptian families. And Pharaoh was so terrified by it that he called Moses and Aaron and told them to take the Israelites and go. Moses and Aaron had told all the Israelites to be ready to move at a moment's notice. So that very night, Moses and Aaron led their people out of Egypt.